This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off.
My name is Kate Blake, and I have four BFRBs. The first one, which is trichotillomania, came when I was 13 years old. I was in middle school in Hawaii, and my family was a military family. We found out we were moving again. And then you know that saying, like, you can make a wish on an eyelash? So, like, I pulled one out to make a wish, like, we wouldn't move. Very futile, I know, but that's how it started. So I started with trichotillomania when I was 13, and it was on just the eyelashes and then the head. So that's how it started. And now I have four, and it's been 20 years since then. So over 20 years, I've accumulated three more.
So what are the other ones that you have?
Trichophagia, which is the hair nibbling or eating one. Dermatillomania, skin picking, and then dermatophagia, which is skin like nibbling or eating as well. I'm not sure if dermatophagia is clinically recognized, but it's in a lot of the literature that's been published. So yeah, I'm not sure.
What is the timeline for the other BFRBs? Were there any that came kind of simultaneously? What was that like for you?
Yeah, so after the eyelashes, it probably was a slow progression into like the scalp, because I remember going to a trich conference when I was in high school. I think I was 15. So 2 years later, and I had just started the scalp. And unfortunately, at that time, I didn't realize like people were out there using tools, which I learned about at the conference, unfortunately. So then I started using tweezers and tape, and it was not that awesome. And then into university with high anxiety levels of like studying and finals is when I developed a little bit of dermatillomania, like just scratching on my upper back, like when I was studying, but it wasn't that bad and it would come and go like barely. So basically it was the two hair ones for the longest time. And then now in my upper 20s and early 30s, it's also dermatillomania comes in like waves, I would say. Yeah, when I'm really, really, really stressed, the skin ones will come. So yeah, it's kind of cyclical. Trich is always there, but the skin one comes in cyclical waves.
So when you first started with your eyelashes, did anyone point it out to you, friends at school or your parents? And what were their responses if they did point it out?
Yeah, so at first, no, because it wasn't noticeable. But then when it became noticeable, like I had no eyelashes, my mom noticed and she took me to a doctor and they did an eye exam. And the doctor actually, because I was so scared to say what it actually was, because my parents were very strict, the doctor actually said it was outdated mascara had caused them to fall out, which I was only 13, so I didn't wear mascara. So it didn't even make sense. And my mom was like, you don't wear mascara, so would you like to try again? And then I told her, and unfortunately, yeah, it wasn't awesome. The response was not great. A lot of just like, just stop it. Like, it's weird. You know better than that. Which I think like every single person who has a BFRB being told like, why don't you just stop it? is like one of the most annoying things. Well, now it's annoying and I can just brush it off. But at the time when I was 13 and I was also scared of like why I had done that, it just makes you feel like you have something wrong with you and like why can't you just figure it out? But especially as a kid, like it's really hard.
Yeah, and it was always, now that I look back on it, it's very weird to me that a lot of the people in my life, adults especially, were like putting the pressure on this kid, me, who is suffering. Like, I hate this thing. And it's like, you need
Yeah.
to do better. I'm like, wait a minute, what? I don't know what I'm doing.
Exactly. Like, I don't know. I need a doctor or a psychiatrist or a psychologist, like someone. I'm 13. I don't know. And I think at the time, because it's a crucial time, oh, school, to be expected to maintain like the status quo. Like, I was always really into studying and getting good grades and sports, just the general like American high school, middle school, high school, university pipeline. So like being expected to maintain that and not being any, given any grace or any like breathing room when something weird is going on, it created this weird like it has to be secret, it's shameful, like you still have to do all these other things and we're just never going to talk about this other thing, which always surprised me. And now, as a mom, I have a 3-year-old daughter. I could never, ever imagine doing that. Like, never, ever, ever. Never, ever, ever. Yeah. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, I get, you look back at like pictures of little you and it really becomes so emotional. I mean, I'm sure it's emotional for anybody, but especially with our experiences, it's like, what the heck were y'all thinking? Why were you talking to me this way? Why were you making me feel this way? I would never do that to anybody else.
Yeah, they say like the voices that kids hear in their head when they're adults are how their parents spoke to them when they were little. Like they create your nascent self-esteem. Like before you rebuild it in your own nuclear family, it's how your parents spoke to you when you were little. And it makes so much sense because it's crushing. Do you know what I mean? Like the things that you would hear in your own head didn't come from nowhere. Like they're things that my parents said. Because my friends didn't know and they were all really nice. So, like, or they were polite and didn't bring it up. But my parents were just, I think they meant well in like the really old love style where it's like, stop it. Like, you know, but it did not work. Yeah. So,
Because it was that time, that age is a tough age. I'll tell you what, that 13 to like any high school, but 13, any teenager year, that's pretty tough. Were there ways that you tried to cover up your missing lashes and eventually, did you have missing parts on your scalp as well?
yeah, so the lashes was tricky because I was more into sports than I was into makeup. So I never wore false lashes like in high school or anything. I just did like black eyeliner. And I did have a bald spot on the top of my head first. And I could hide it a little with like hairstyles. But then unfortunately, my, like it wasn't, looking back, it wasn't even that big. It was only maybe the size of a quarter, a little bigger than a quarter, and it should have been left alone, but my mom convinced me to shave my head and wear wigs to hide it completely, and it just wrecked my self-esteem like completely. I wish I could go back in time and not do that at all, because I think like having a shaved head for a young girl when it's not your choice is devastating. So it would have been better to just try and have the hair grow back and have the follicles rebuild, because it would, they had only been newly pulled out. So a lot of hair follicles will naturally regrow if they're not too badly damaged. And like I look back and I'm like, I only pulled like maybe one or two times there, so they probably would have grown back, but it was too late. So wigs, and then eventually when I became an adult, like after university, I became good at makeup and I could wear fake eyelashes if I needed to. Yeah. And now, well, we're going way beyond, but now I wear fake nails and I do wear wigs. I've been wearing wigs since that time when I was 15.
I know from talking to people in the community, they love if when it was their choice, they loved to shave their head because it gave them that freedom, but then they said the upkeep was like kind of annoying to them. How's your relationship with that now?
Yeah. So in high school and university, I was wearing the wigs that are sport wigs. So they require you to have your head shaved down to the scalp, and it's double stick tape. I don't even know if they sell these kind anymore because they're so awful. So the tape, so I was an athlete for soccer and tennis, but then in university, I did marine biology and I taught scuba diving. So I was always in the water. So I had to use so much tape, and then like the heat in the water would melt the tape to my skin, and it was intensely painful. And I had to use acetone to like get it off of my skin, but that tape is the only thing that would leave it on my head. So in university, 1 year, I said like, okay, I'm gonna try really hard. And for 6 months, I didn't pull at all. It grew out and I had like a short pixie. And at that time, my hair wasn't badly damaged. And that was like, what, 2017? So I was 27. Yeah, so I think I was 17. So after 4 years of pulling, it still grew back. But then finals hit and I completely relapsed and wrecked it. So then after that, I've just worn wigs and shaved my head. And the wigs I wear after university have all been the kind where there's just an elastic band that holds it on, kind of like a hat, not that tape situation. Because, like, I look back and it was so painful, like when it was melted on and it would like be pulling at the skin, and I would constantly have like tension headaches, and it was messing up the hair. I would be like in a bad mood because I'd always have that kind of stuff. And my parents would always be like, "You're always just in a bad mood." And I'm like, my whole head hurts so bad. Like, and I never told them that, but I told my mom recently because she was like, "You were always in a bad mood." And I'm like, I was in, my head hurt. And she's like, "Oh, I didn't know that." And I'm like, okay, well, that's what it was. Now, I think the hair is so badly damaged that it won't grow back. I don't think it will grow back now. It's been too long. It's like 20 years. The follicles are all probably damaged. My goal in the future is to have like such great self-esteem that I just keep like a bald head, and I would love to get like a tattooed head. That would be awesome. But my self-esteem is good, but not that good because I still like to have like long hair. You know, it's hard to just, I think I would need higher self-esteem to just have a bald head the whole time.
And hey, the tattoo sounds really cool. So if you
I
do it, you got to
know.
take pictures.
Eventually, when I'm older, maybe.
So when you do pull the hair, what do you do with the hair afterwards?
After I pull the hair, it depends what the bulb of the hair is. So if it's the whole, then I might nibble on it. If it's red at the end, which means like bloody, then I'll nibble on it. If it's not that and it didn't come out like with the whole casing on it, then I'll probably just like flick it away. Yeah, that's probably what I would do with it. I don't do anything other than that. Like I know some people like rub it or keep it or like line them up, but I don't do any of that.
And then how about with your eyelashes?
Same kind of thing, although they're not as prone with the follicle coming out with the hair. Yeah, eyelashes I try to do the least. So like because they're the most visible and the hardest to cover up. Like, if I have no eyebrows, it's easier to cover up than if I have no eyelashes, in my opinion. So, the eyelashes are like the last thing I try to pull. So, I try not to do them, even though I do sometimes, but I try really hard not to do them.
Have there been times in your experience with trichotillomania that you've noticed, like, hey, things are kind of growing back, and I don't even know why?
Yeah. So, something I found very interesting is color pigmentation will be different. So a few years ago, I was looking up why that is, because people that pull a lot, they'll notice, or the texture of the hair will be different. Like people will notice maybe hair grows back with a kinky or curly texture, or white or silver. And it's really interesting because it's how the hair follicle is damaged. And in some cases, it can fix itself over time, and in others, it doesn't. But a lot of, like, if my whole head grew in, I reckon I would have quite a lot of white and grays because, like, over time and pulling, I have damaged the color pigmentation in the skin. And I just thought it was interesting. And of course, for people that pull, for me, if there's something off or different about hair, I'm very like zoned in on it. So the white hairs, if I see them, they are like my focus point, which doesn't help them recover. I just thought that was interesting over time that it could change.
Mine grows back curly. So I have like, and
Oh.
eventually, I guess it gets heavy enough where it'll just kind of blend in with my hair is kind of straight, but any humidity, I have like a something in it. It's not a stick straight, but yeah, when I pull from the same area, it's always behind my left ear. And it's like every few years I see a little curlicue sticking out of the rest of my hair. But it's this every time, this curly hair every single time.
I don't have enough hair for it to do that because I keep mine shaved down low. But I reckon it would, because some grows back thicker, some grows back kinky, like odd kinks in it. Yeah, it's just interesting. And it's stuff I don't think normal people would notice, but not normal, but neurotypical people would notice. But people that have BFRBs, I think, are hyperfixation on hair specifically, if you have trich. A lot of people would immediately notice, like, if there's a little bit of difference in the hair or the color or something like that. Certainly, like, in my husband, I notice his grays, but it does obviously, like, I don't pull his hair. I have no, like, want to pull his hair, but I notice them immediately. And I'm like, oh, look, another one. And he's like, great. Thanks for pointing that out.
I have a friend who pulls out her eyelashes, and the other day she was like, "So I know you pull from your scalp. I can't tell the difference between my hair textures. Like, can you show me what you mean?" And I'm like, "No, absolutely not." I said, "No." I said, "You're just gonna have to trust me. My fingertips know the difference. If yours don't, God bless, because I'm not showing you ever."
True. Yeah, that's how I feel about explaining the bulb situation to people that don't nibble hair. So, like, do you have trichophagia or trichotillomania or both?
So I just have trichotillomania. I rub the hair through my lips and like I'll hold
Yeah,
it
gotcha.
in my lips, but I've never like nibbled it.
Yeah. So, like, the difference is, like, if you bite different ones, they have different textures, like when you bite them. Like some don't. Yeah, I don't want to make it sound great because then like people would be don't try this at home, anyone listening. But they have different textures, so that's why some are preferred. Like if you get one that has a certain one, it's like, because I've done it so often, I think it's gonna have a certain crunch or not when I bite it, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah,
I feel
it
like it's
does.
so explicit. I want to be like, no one try this at home, please. Just take my word for it.
They better not. They better not. If you're listening, you probably already do it. And if you're listening and you just want the awareness, don't try this at home. Seriously,
No, don't do
we're
it.
professionals, okay?
Yeah.
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program we'll coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today. I remember before I even knew that there were other BFRBs, I saw kids in my class biting their nails. And I think at the time, people were trying to tell me that my trichotillomania was like this nervous habit. And so I'm looking over and I'm thinking, oh, you bite your nails, nervous habit. I tried to do that instead of pulling out my hair, and I didn't like it. I couldn't, I guess my teeth don't have like the right shape to like bite the nail properly. Something wasn't working. And so maybe that's the same reason why like I didn't go the next step for like the bite or the nibbling, because I already tried to nibble and it wasn't working for me.
Well, that's good, actually.
Because nobody was mean to them and everybody was mean to me.
Yeah,
So.
it's interesting, right? Because a lot of people have, so I guess nail biting Because it can be a BFRB if it's like clinical, but a lot of subclinical nail biting is completely culturally accepted, which I find very interesting, because why did everyone say that that one is fine, but the other ones are not fine?
Oh, exactly. And like it's in every movie, it's in every TV show. I mean, that we have the saying, oh, that makes me want to pull my hair out. They have this is a nail biter. But
Nail
like,
biter, yeah.
yeah, but with ours, it's like if someone were to say like, oh yeah, I really do pull my hair out, the response would be like, what? Whereas if you're like, I bite my nails, they're like, yeah, so what, everybody? It's like, what do you mean?
Yeah, I started, with people that I know and want to have the conversation with. If they're like, oh, I'm just so stressed, I want to pull my hair out. And I'm like, really? And they'll know that I have the hair pulling disorder. And they're like, oh, my bad. No, yeah, you're right. That's bad. I'm sorry. And I'm like, yeah, I'll just say it like that. 'Cause like they don't mean it, but they also don't know that it's like linked to an actual disorder. It drives me a little bit crazy, because like the pull the hair out is linked back to like asylum days in like Victorian England. People were put in the asylum for it. And I'm like, wow, that times are crazy, because we still say like, I want to pull my hair out, or I'm going so crazy, like I'm gonna pull my hair out, or I want to pull my hair out. I'm like, it has nothing. They're not crazy. They're not crazy. They're just have a BFRB.
Anytime I see BFRBs represented in the media, but especially trichotillomania, it feels very violent. And I don't know about you, tell me your experience, but like for me, trichotillomania is like pretty gentle. Like it's really, really, I'm like very intricate with what I'm doing. It's not this like violent nature that it seems to be portrayed as. To me, it's much different, much softer. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I hate how the media, yeah, because it's always in horror movies. And I think horror movies do us so wrong, because it portrays it as like rending the hair. You know what I mean? Like they're literally like ripping it out and being like, not in a manic episode, but like in a like rage about it. And it's never like that ever. So I think it's just really poor representation. It's like a short form for crazy. And actually, a little side note, but in like the first mention of hair pulling was in the Iliad by Homer, and they would rend their hair in grief, like to show grief and to show rage and like big emotion. And I think something got lost in translation, where people think like that's what we're doing, like we're so upset that we are ripping our hair out in like clumps. You know what I mean? But that's not how it is at all. So some media clearly did study it. Like, I don't know if you've seen what's the one with Charlize Theron?
Young
Young
adults.
adult, young adult. And then there was a recent one with Anna Kendrick where she had it as well, that I thought was a pretty good portrayal. But a lot of the horror ones are just so off and so, yeah, just bad. Yeah, it's not violent at all. In fact, whenever I do it, it's like I'm sitting on the couch, or I'm sitting at a chair. So it's not like I'm like pacing around the house like in a horror movie. Yeah.
It makes me wonder, like I like the idea of having it be represented, right? Put it in there. Have a character do it. But talk to somebody and say, does anybody know anybody who does it? Because come on now.
Yeah, definitely people know. Like, ever since I started talking about like my book, so like in the past few months, I've told all my friends about it, like once it was published, and they're like, oh yeah, I know someone who has trick. Oh, I know, so I didn't know it had a name. And I'm like, yeah, there's so many people that have it, and yet the representation is poor and also lacking. 'Cause like we're everywhere. Really, we're everywhere, and people just don't know about it.
Yeah, so let's jump right in. So this children's book, I have a copy right next to me, and it's beautiful. It's really well done. I love all of the different BFRBs you talk about. I think it's great that you're focusing on all of them and really giving the representation there. Tell us the process of you wanting to write the book and then eventually having it for everybody in the world.
4 years ago, before my daughter was born, I was writing a book about trick and like trick across the board, the history of trick, which is why I knew about like the Iliad stuff, trick in like pop culture, like the whole range. But when I started editing it, and then I took a break because my daughter was born. Fast forward to now, I started editing it again and I realized, oh my gosh, the idea of learning how to edit this, format it, and put it up on Amazon and Ingram Spark, which is the place other than Amazon, is so stressful. So I wanted to make a book that had more pictures, less words, so a children's book. And I wanted to make the book I wish I had when I was a kid. Like, literally, what would I want? Beautiful pictures of, oh, because also I'm thinking of what my daughter likes in books. She likes pictures of other kids looking out of the pages, high color. Maybe one or two sentences per page. And for me personally, it has to have non-judgmental language. Like that was the number one thing. So my area of interest right now, as well as like child development, and especially Montessori, where you state things in facts and just like as they are. You don't add embellishment or you don't try to like fool kids in any way with what you're saying. So I wanted the words to just be like, many people around the world have this. Like, it's true. Like, to normalize it and say, like, this child, oh, yeah, in the book to explain 12 different BFRBs, each child has one of the BFRBs and they talk about what they have, but then also what they do to try and help keep their hands busy or their mouth busy so that it's not just like their BFRB is their whole person. Because I remember feeling, yeah, so isolated and felt like really alone in it when I was especially a child. And to see that there's all these kids who have it. And obviously, the kids in the book do not have it. Those kids are like stock photos of children. No children were like outed in the making of it or anything. I want that to be clear because my dad, who doesn't know how publishing works, he was like, "Did you get permission from all of these kids' parents to have their photos?" And I was like, "Dad, I paid for these photos from like a public domain website or from a like a domain website. Do you know what I mean? Like I have the it's not really that. Yeah, anyway. Do you know what I mean?" I wanted the book to tell about the BFRBs, normalize them, and then also at the back, I put some resources, and all the resources are around the world. And also, I think almost all of them, if not all of them, are nonprofit or like educational organizations, so people can access them for free. So it's just really important to me. I think going forward, I want the next one I want to do about hair, because I'm running into the thing right now because I wear wigs. My daughter sees me with a shaved head with a beanie on, which is what I'm sitting in right now at home. And then when I go out, I wear a wig. And I have never seen a book that explores like people that have all these different alternate hairstyles, except there might be really good ones for like BIPOC communities that are. It's more common for them to wear hair systems, like whether it's weaves or wigs or have a shaved head. But I don't know of any that talk about the reason being like trick instead of like cancer or Black community culture. So yeah, I just want to make them so that as my daughter grows up, she can know about what I have, and also for kids that have it, they can feel like they're not alone. Like that is like the main thing.
It's great. It's beautiful. I can imagine it like in a classroom. You know, every classroom in the whole world has one in the room, and the kids can look at it and just say, like, oh, great. Like, I do wonder often if the response wasn't like shock and horror, what are you doing? Would my experience have been different? Would I have grown up loving myself sooner than, you know, getting to that point later, you know, in adulthood? Could I have had a book where it was like, oh, this is really just part of you. It's no big deal. Nothing to be scared of. Would my life have been completely different? Probably.
Yeah, I just sent off the copies to the library associations in America. Like, it's like they are in charge of ordering and putting stuff in the catalogs for libraries. Because someone else that reviewed the book early on, they said, like, oh, why don't you contact schools? And I was like, do you know how many schools there are? What school? Like, I just, all of them. So I just sent them to the library associations. And I'm gonna see, because I was like, how can I get them into schools? Because I would love them to be in schools for exactly the reason that you just said. Like, but I don't know. I never done it before. So it's been a huge learning process.
Well, that's awesome. And then you know what? If you do end up contacting like schools that you can drive to, like really close to your house, like, hey, maybe you're doing a presentation for the kids and then the kids get to have them in the room. You know, it could be something where you're actually in person also explaining this too.
True. So I live in Australia. I don't know if I don't think I mentioned that on here, but I live in Australia and my husband happens to be a teacher. So I bet he's the one that gave me the library information for the US and Australia. So I bet he'd have some good ways to work it in. I did request them for our local library like unit. So yeah, I am hoping that that helps as well. But also I should note that I know that like you are online obviously, but I still have a lot of anxiety with kids. I want to be so careful about how things are done and how I just am always scared to say or do something that might make a kid like feel bad. Do you know what I mean? So I do want to do those things, but also I want to leave space and say, I am also nervous about doing those things. It's not exactly my wheelhouse. I used to teach kindergarten and elementary school in Korea and Japan, but that's like teaching English. You know, it's not so personal and would have an impact on them. Although I will note in those places, kids very much did have trick and especially the skin biting around the nail. Very, very common in Asian schools, Korean and Japanese. That's what I know. I don't know if I could do, like, I love your videos on Instagram. I love them so, so much, and they make me laugh, and I feel very seen. I could absolutely never do that. I'm too nervous about it. I don't think I could do that.
Well, a few years ago, I couldn't either. I was scared to death. I used to be anonymous up on here. So it's been little baby steps every day. So maybe not yet, but maybe one day you'll be making videos too.
Yeah, that's like on the anonymous thing. I almost didn't put my author photo online. That's why it's not on the book, because I was almost nervous to like put it there. And then I decided, no, I will put it on my, like it is on Amazon and Goodreads, my actual author photo. But that's why it's not on the book, because I was still like, because the book had to be finished like months back. Do you know what I mean? And I was so nervous about like my face being there. And then my husband was like, why? It's just you. It's your face. That's what you look like. And like, it's how I, yeah, it's how I look like. But there was something about like being seen that I was like, oh, I don't wanna, I don't know if I should do that. So yeah, I totally get the anonymous thing because the first book did not make it with my picture on it because I was still very nervous about it.
And that's fine. You know what I mean? Like take those steps, like do whatever. The most important thing is that you are getting this out there and that's making you happy. Who cares if the face isn't there yet? You know what I mean? See how it goes. But you know, what you're doing is so important and so necessary and amazing. And you're doing it with or without the face on there. So
Oh, thanks.
how would you describe your relationship with your BFRBs now versus when you were a little kid?
So when I was a little kid, I think my number one goal was just to stop everything cold turkey and be normal. That has quotes around it, normal. I just wanted to stop everything and not have it at all. Whereas now, over 20 years, like I've tried so many things, and I think I've come to the like begrudging acceptance that they are a part of me. I will always have them. And I go through phases of trying harder or trying less hard to stop them, depending on my life. Because sometimes I just have to give myself like space to breathe and to mess up and not be so hard on myself, because I used to get really, really, really like in a thought spiral. Like I should also note that I have comorbid anxiety and depression, which are extremely common to have comorbidly with any BFRB, but they do a number. So when I'm in a low phase, now, as an adult, I don't beat myself up for like slipping up or having an episode or anything like that. And actually, it's been much, much better for my mental health to not focus on it and berate myself, yeah, for doing it. I don't think I'll ever get to the stage where I'm like, I don't care that I have them, and I could just pull all the hair off my body and like pick all the skin off my body. That's impossible. But yeah, I don't think I'll ever be like 100% comfortable, but definitely I've mellowed out on the whole like, I should never do it, or I'm like a bad person, or like I'm a disgusting person. Like that kind of negative talk is not helpful for me at all. And it doesn't help the future me like tomorrow that's gonna get up and try again. Like being gentle is much, much better now for me.